Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Preps Today with John Millay. Normally, you'd hear Jim Suhan's voice with me. I'm John Millay. Jim, as we know, is at the Olympics in Tokyo, so I am lining up some very special guests in his absence during the summer weeks here while we don't really have any high school activities going on. My very special guest this week is a guy I've known for a long time, Dave Wright. It's hard to describe, Dave, what you've done over your career, but I think as far as high school sports, people know you best as a PA announcer. State hockey, state basketball, state softball. What else? What am I missing? You've done about everything, but on the high school realm here, well, you're the press box announcer at U.S. Bank Stadium for football. Have right. I missed anything?
I've been the guy for baseball for years when they played over at Midway Stadium. I handled a lot of the media stuff, particularly when baseball split out into two or three or four classes. So jack of all trades and master of very little.
join the club. We're in an exclusive club, you and I. And like myself, I'm an Iowa native. You are not, but you're not a Minnesota native. Tell us a little bit about your early years, how you ended up in Minnesota.
Well, I grew up in Detroit, and when I was a freshman, I went to high school in Detroit. I actually went to high school at Catholic Central. Frank Tanano, who pitched in the big leagues, was a teammate of mine as a freshman, and he was a stud as a freshman. And the Michigan High School League in those days, because Michigan was on standard time, would play ball three, walk, strike two, you're out. And he just, if you remember him, he threw 100 miles an hour when he came up originally. I batted against him a couple of times. He's like, yeah, right.
You know, you held a bat against.
Well, I actually got a hit off him in a Legion game. I actually got a hit off of one of those things where it hit the end of the bat and went down the line kind of deal, you know. And the next time up, he drilled me, you know.
Of course he did.
We kind of laughed about it. But when I was a sophomore, the priest who ran my high school, the Brazilian Order, I didn't do a great job as a student, as a freshman. So I went over to Windsor, Ontario, which just over the border from Detroit. It was run by the same order of priests. And the whole idea was, I was supposed to go there for 1 year and kind of really work on my studies and get better. And I did. But during that particular year, my mother passed away. She suffered a stroke and passed away. And my father was ill as well. So I said, can I just stay here? I'm doing better here. So I ended up going to high school in Canada, which was in itself an interesting thing to do. And that's how I actually got started as a PA announcer, because I wanted to play hockey badly, but unfortunately, that's how I played was badly. And our coach, Father Cullen, who was the coach, had said to me, well, you going to try out for the team? And I said, well, yeah, I really want to. And he goes, well, I really hope you don't. We're going to be pretty good. You're not going to make it. But I got a job for you. That year, they were moving inside because we used to play games outside in those days. This was 1970. So we moved indoors to Windsor Arena to play. Show you how things have changed, John. This was a big deal. You can play on Saturday night. You played 3 12-minute stop time periods.
That's how you do it.
You know, and we actually had a pretty good high school team. Mike Eaves, who played in the NHL for a long time, was on our team. Eddie Meehl, who played in the NHL for quite a while, was our goalie. So you know, we were probably a good Class A team in the, you know, in the Breck, kind of in that Breck Hermantown, that sort of thing. But that's how I started as a PA announcer. And then when I came to college, I went to St. Thomas. And at the time, St. Thomas was pretty small. It was still an all-male school, and the journalism department was only 16 students. And the guy who Father Cullen, who was not only the hockey coach, but he was my English teacher. And he was tough. Boy, he was a tough hombre. In fact, I little side story, my wife met him once, and she said, Father, what kind of hockey player was he? And Father said, he met well. Don't we all?
Don't we all?
I came out to St. Thomas for the journalism school, and Reno Batoria, who you might, who was Twins, old Twins fans would remember, was the Twins' original third baseman in 1961. He was my history teacher in high school and our baseball coach. And he recommended, he says, you're going to like Minnesota. He said, he gave me a name of a guy to call. When he got out there, he says, tell him I told you to call him. He'll get you a job. That guy was Howard Fox, who was then the Twins president. And so that, I ended up working some Twins games because of that. But when I get to St. Thomas, I started out doing the PA there for hockey. And then it just, you know, then I just kept doing it. I got into the high school stuff because what happened was in 1977, they were going to get St. Thomas and Hamlin were moving into the Coliseum to play hockey. St. Thomas had been playing over at Drake Arena on St. Paul Academy's campus. And so they played in there and they started playing high school games the next year. And Dick Stanford originally was doing a lot of the games, but Dick got the North Star job as a PA announcer, so he couldn't do the games anymore. So they said, well, let's get that guy from St. Thomas. And that's how I ended up starting to do the high school games. So I did the first game in the Coliseum, St. Thomas Hamlin game, and I did the last game, the section final, Hill Murray and Stillwater. What was that, 42 years later or whatever it was.
Wow. You're the bookend of the Coliseum.
Yeah. Well, I always joked to everybody and said, hey, the first 1,000 games are the hardest, you know, and then it got easier. You know, and there were years there, John, where we played, where we had 50 or 60 games because we had the St. Paul City Conference. We had the North Suburban Conference playing in there. And then, of course, all the section games. And that's really the section games were the one that people remember the most. I mean, that's when the building was packed and it was fun. You know, and all those White Bear Lake Hill Murray games, it seemed like they were playing each other every year in the section at some point, you know. Right. And I always said the section final game, the section final for hockey is the best game of the year. It's also the worst game of the year because, you know, you feel so bad for the team that gets beat. You know, I mean, you lose in the state tournament. Yeah, it's a bummer, but you got there. You had your TV time out and everything. But you lose in the section final, and it just feels like you didn't do anything, you know? Right. So, I mean, that was how but for pure excitement, you know, you couldn't get a better atmosphere than a section final. I have to tell you a quick story on that. Yeah. The year Herb Brooks got fired from the Rangers, whatever year, I think it was 84, Johnson was in the section final. And I'm walking by the back door there where you got in the Coliseum, and the place is packed. The fire department has already shut it down, so you can't have anybody else in. And here's Herb Brooks pounding on the back door, trying to get in. And I saw him, and I knew him a little bit. But I'd met him once or twice. And I came over and the guard said, you can't let him in. I said, you don't know who this is. You have to let him in. And he says, well, if I catch trouble, I'm going to come after you. I said, you can come after me. You know, after that, Herbie and I were buddies the rest of the time. He said, because I got him into a locked building.
Oh, there you go. There you go. And you at the state basketball tournaments just a few months ago, you were telling me, and I think Bob Madison from our staff at the high school league, about the first high school state tournament game you did, and this was not planned, correct?
Oh, no, it wasn't.
Tell that story. That's a great one.
Well, I can't remember who Creighton was playing, but Creighton was playing somebody, and I was there just to watch a friend of mine's kid play. And Dick Stanford was the longtime voice of football and basketball and hockey, and Dick got ill at the game, at halftime of the game. Dick got ill. And Howard Boyd, who was then the PR director, came over to me, and he said, Dick got ill. We need a basketball announcer. You've done basketball. And at that point, I had done one basketball game in my life, filling in at St. Thomas. And actually, I ended up doing St. Thomas's basketball games for many years after, but I hadn't started yet. And I said, well, yeah, I've done basketball. You know, I've done one game, you know. So I went over there at halftime, and John Vosepka is the scorer. And I knew John a little bit. And he's looking at me like, what are you doing over here? I explained to him. He goes, oh. So I did the second half of that game. And the second game, which was Edina, and I think it was Mankato West, and Skip Peltier was running it for the high school league, came over at one point. He knew me because Skip was an old hockey player. And he goes, what are you doing here? You know, and I explained it to him. And that's how I got into basketball. The next year, Skip gave me two consolation round games. because I'd been doing the consolation round for hockey at that point for a couple years already. That used to be my old joke, John. And when I do the section final, I said, "Yeah, you know, congrats on winning. You don't want to see me next week because you see me, you lost. So you don't want to see me." But that led to starting to do basketball games then. And that's how I got into the basketball tournament. And right about that same time, they were still playing section basketball next door in Roy Wilkins for a couple of years. And so I did a couple of section games for John Bartz there at Roy Wilkins. And that's how I got into the basketball tournament. And eventually, when Bob Reed retired, they moved me up into some more games. And it just kind of went from there. And the same thing happened in hockey. I did consolation for hockey for, oh, I don't know, 10, 12, 13 years, whatever it was. And then when Bob retired, they moved me over.
There you go. Let's take a quick moment to thank our sponsor of the Preps Today with John Millay podcast, the Pizza Barn in downtown Princeton, Minnesota. They've got everything you'd need there, a great menu. It should be the pizza and a lot of other stuff barn because there's so much. They have so many choices there. They've got that food truck running around all over. So as always, you should get up there, Dave. I was thinking the only downside I have to the Pizza Barn is I don't live close enough to Princeton. But it's a great spot, a great menu. Stop in and say hi to the Pizza Barn folks from us. Let's get back to your history here, Dave. I think you and I, in my memory, it was the St. Paul Saints. That's where you and I first connected, mm-hmm. like in the mid to late 90s, I'm thinking, because you were the first employee of the St. Paul Saints, correct?
That's true. I got hired. I started in September of 1992, about 9 months before they played their first game. What had happened was I'd done the high school baseball games and football games for years at Midway Stadium, the second Midway renovation, because I was the PA guy for St. Agnes and St. Bernard's football games. And so I knew Bob Klepridge, who ran the stadium. And I had done some of the high school baseball games at a PA. And I happened to be talking to him one day, and Klepp said, "Well, Mike Beck is here in town. He's actually, you know, trying to work out the contract for the stadium." And I said, "Can I talk to him for a minute?" At the time, what was happening was we were doing a cable TV show for Continental Cablevision. And I was supposed to have Jim Rantz as my guest. And I knew Jim. He was the farm director. I knew him because I went to school with this kid, Mike. But Jim couldn't come that day because if you remember, I don't know if you were up here when this happened, one of the worst losses in Twins history happened that day. They lost to Oakland in the middle of the pennant race. A guy named Eric Fox, who hit about two homers in his life, hit a three-run homer to beat him. And so they had an emergency meeting, and Rantz called me and said, "I can't be there. We're having this emergency meeting." So I got a hold of Beck and said, "Hey, would you like to be on TV tonight to talk about your team?" And so he did. And afterwards, we went out for a drink, and I was looking for some full-time work. And I said, "Well, you're going to need a PR guy, right?" He's asked me, "How many people do you think we could draw?" And I can't believe I said this to him, John, but I said, "Well, I think you can get 1,500 a game, 2,500 if you're as good as I hear you are." Which I can't believe I said that to him, but that's what I got hired. I was the PR guy, and I was the staff for about 3 or 4 weeks until Bill Fanning got hired as the GM. I wrote my own checks. I wrote my checks to myself. How's that for a deal? $200 a week. That's what I was getting paid.
Whether you needed it or not. There you go.
And I didn't have a computer. All I had was a little typewriter. And I whacked out the first release, and the Star Tribune ran the first story. Dennis Bracken ran the first story, who I knew Dennis because he had covered some MIAC stuff. And I talked him into doing the first story, and then it kind of went from there. And it was a lot of fun.
It was so much fun. I've done tons of different things in my journalism career, but the Saints, man, and it's so hard to describe to people what that atmosphere was like. It's a similar now at the new ballpark, but it's really not. At Midway, you know, all the nooks and crannies of that place, and the parking lot, and I have so many great memories. And you were the guy. You kind of took me by the hand the first day I showed up there, and boy, we had fun in that press box during games, and we had fun in your little office down there. I had more fun doing that than almost anything I've ever done.
Well, you know, in no way really, we didn't really know what was going to happen. You know, we honestly didn't. And I still can remember that first day, that first game in 1993, they played Thunder Bay. And the day of the game, it starts raining. It's raining. Not hard, but it's raining. But we still sell out. And the Saints won the game in the bottom of the ninth. I can still remember this guy named Scott Meadows hit singled in the winning run in the bottom of the ninth, and we're on the front page of both papers. And I'm thinking I'm really smart. I'm really in on this. And about 9 o'clock the next morning, I get a phone call at home. Somebody who had seen my name in the program, and this woman's chewing me out because we didn't have enough bathrooms. I didn't know how much women hated porta potties. And they hate them. Yeah. And I just laughed about it. And I got to the office, and we got about three more calls on that very subject. And that day along, right, that day when they – Mr. Beck made a big executive decision. They only had two bathrooms because, remember, it was built for high school baseball.
Sure.
And the two bathrooms in the place were then women's rooms, and the men's had the porta potties for the summer. And at the end of the summer, Jim Schaible was the St. Paul mayor, and he sat down with Beck. And we had a good year. They won the championship the first year, which was amazing. The star was Leon Durham. He was the name, you know, Leon. But they also had two guys on that team who went on to play in the big leagues, Ray Ordonez, who was a shortstop, a Cuban that they had, and Eddie Oropesa, who both ended up and had big league careers. And, of course, Kevin Millar, who had probably the most famous of them. Anyway, so Vex sat down with Schaible, and Mayor Schaible says, suppose you want more seats, and Vex said, no, what I really want first is more bathrooms. And Schaible kind of looked at him like, what are you talking about? You know, and Mrs. Schaible was there at the time, and she said, yes, you want more bathrooms. Believe me on this one. And that's how they got more bathrooms.
The mayor's wife has a lot of pull, no kidding.
Well, you know, and we made things up on the fly, John. When something didn't work right, kind of go, well, that was a bad idea. You know, we're not doing that again. My favorite thing of that first year, I don't know if I've ever told you this story, is on July 4th of that year, we were playing a home game. And a guy wanted to propose to his girlfriend. And, you know, in those days, that was pretty common. And now it's very common, right? But that didn't happen all that often. But we said, can we take a crack at this? So Annie Heidekoper and I got together, and we came up with this idea of we were going to pick this woman out of the crowd, have her throughout the first pitch to represent everybody on the 4th of July. And while this was being done, and we had the guy call us that morning to tell us what she was wearing so we could pick her out of the crowd. And meanwhile, we brought him downstairs, dressed him up in catcher's gear, because you've seen thousands of first pitches, but you never look at the catcher. You always look at the thrower, right? And the whole idea was she was going to throw the ball to him. He was going to come out with a baseball, you know, so-and-so, will you marry me, and get down on one knee.
Right.
And then we decided what to do. We had just put in a new scoreboard. And if you remember, the scoreboard there only had a one-line message board on the bottom.
Right.
And so we decided we would do this kind of pantomime. And the best part of this was Al Crocker, who was a great Channel 4 photographer. We got him on the inside, and he filmed all of it. He filmed the guy getting dressed and our catcher helping him get dressed and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And he went out and she threw out the first pitch. He takes off the mask, puts the sound, and the crowd really doesn't know what's going on because it's all kind of pantomime. And then on the scoreboard down below, he had the one line, so-and-so, I can't remember her name, I should. Will you marry me? And as soon as she said yes, my one big contribution to this was I leaned over at the sound guy and go, now. And he hit the hallelujah chorus right at the keyboard. And the crowd just went crazy. You know, and I wish I could see film of it. It was wonderful.
I wish I'd have been there for that. That's how great.
And that's the kind of stuff that we made that stuff up on the fly a lot of times. And people got a kick out of it.
There you go. And following your Saints days, you went down the street to Hamline University for a nice long stretch. Talk about your days there.
Well, I was the sports information director there. Stephanie Harris, who had worked with us, had left, and she was the SID. And she was going to Florida to be with her father, who wasn't very well. Now she's a biggie at NASCAR. You know, she's one of the top marketing guys. And she said, well, they need an SID in Hamline. And I knew these people because I had done the PA at St. Thomas for years for their football and basketball and hockey. And I got hired as the SID there. And, and it was – you know, it was a challenge because Hamline was having a hard time trying to keep up with St. Thomas and Bethel and Augsburg. But I really enjoyed it. I, you know, I did it for 6.5 years. Loved the people there. I loved the coaches. You get along great with them. I wish we could have done a little better in football. They just haven't been very good in football. It's just it's been one of their things. But hockey was a lot of fun. And then when we hired Natalie Darwitz, that put Hamlin kind of on the hockey map. She had the office across the hall from me, and I used to kid her. I said, "Yeah, I see you once a month." It was really and the kids were great, John. And working with those kids, what I found, I was talking to my wife about this the other day. You found yourself really feeling paternal about them, protecting them, wanting them. And now several of them have really good jobs. Cole, who was one of my best photographers, is now the video guy for the soccer team, and a very talented kid. I mean, these kids, we had a lot of fun together. We laughed a lot together. The whole idea was, and Steph had done this already, but listen, even if we're not winning, and we weren't winning a lot of times, we're going to run a very professional outfit here. The teams are going to want to come in here. And you've been in that gym. Hutton Arena was built in the 30s. It has no air conditioning. It was so hot in the wintertime, we had to open the windows sometimes at basketball games because it was that hot. But we made it fun. And, we had hockey over at Oscar Johnson Arena, which is just a little county rink with no heat. So my wife lent an electric blanket to our scorers so they could sit on an electric blanket at the scorers' table. And we had a heater under the table.
Unbelievable.
The whole point was, so it's Division III. We wanted to have fun. They played hard. And the nice thing was you really enjoyed every victory. You relished every one of them, and particularly every now and then, had a few upsets here or there. Knocked off St. Thomas a couple of times, which was a big deal. I mean, that was something they hadn't done there for a while. I knew the world, obviously, from having done the PA at St. Thomas for years, but I saw it from a different side and really, really respected how hard those guys work. And I'll be very interested now to see what happens for them now that St. Thomas is out of that league. That's at least one game that, very honestly, John, in football, they had no shot. They had no chance. No chance against them at all. And, Justin Spriggs, who was my quarterback for 4 years, was our quarterback, was my best worker. I used a lot of athletes all the time because one thing I found out about athletes is they know to be on time, because if they're not on time, they don't play. And that's right. Justice was my basketball statistician for 4 years. And when he was a sophomore there as the quarterback, he did something that is very hard to do. He led the MIAC touchdown passes and sacks. That's not easy. And every time he would get sacked, I'd kind of look at him and go, "Justice, please go.
We need you. I need you in my office.
I need you for basketball. I remember the last game of the year, I said, "Justice, remember, we got a basketball game next week. You can't get hurt." Okay.
There you go. Well, David, it's been great talking to you. As I often say, the best part of my job is hanging out with the people I get to hang out with. And you and I go, boy, about as far back as anybody I know.
And I have to tell you, John, it's still a kick. I was talking to somebody the other day about who said, "Hey," he said, "did you work this basketball game?" And it happened to be a game that I worked over at Williams Arena when the kid from Cook hit the shot from midcourt to win
it.
And when it left his hands, I'm thinking, "Oh my God, that's going in. he's going to win this." And I was the guy who I was on the mic the day Hop Arbor threw it in from his tail over in the corner. Right. I never saw it.
I didn't either. I was writing the game story. Hopkins loses because it was right at the end. I had a deadline coming up, and all of a sudden the crowd roars. I saw the replay on the Jumbotron, but the game was over, and the dude throws it in from the seat of his pants. Yeah.
Well, this was the first year of replay.
Right.
And the officials are running over. They didn't really. And Jimmy Robinson, God rest his soul, is looking at it. And he says, "It's good. Turn around and signal it's good." They do. And I don't think I've ever told you this. Kenny Novak came running down and said, "That's a three-pointer, isn't it?" And Jimmy said, "Don't brush your luck, Kenny."
Of course. Oh, I can hear both of those guys. Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, so I mean, that stuff is still exciting, you know, and as long as my voice holds out and I can do it, I hope to be able to do a few more years of it because it's still fun.
We love having you there, Dave. Whenever I walk into a tournament and I see my friend Dave Wright, it's a good day. So appreciate you spending a few minutes with us here. Keep doing what you're doing. And everybody, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.